Welcome to tonight's program. My name is Mike Malloy. Ooh. Did you see the rally by the crazy people in front of the U.S. Capitol today? Some video footage. There they were again. I looked at the video coverage of this anti-healthcare or health insurance reformation rally, and I'll be damned if I could see a so-called minority face. All I saw were a bunch of well-fed, well-dressed white people. That's all I saw. I may be wrong. A couple of comments about that in just a second. You know, we don't have guests on this program very often. Tonight we are going to be joined at the top of the next hour. Rich Stockwell is going to come on and chat for a few minutes. He's a senior producer of Countdown with Keith Olbermann on MSNBC. And I want you to stick around for that. What we're going to talk about, I think, is important. All right? That's next hour. First, Ron of Briarwood mentions that at the Klan rally in D.C. today, Representative John Boehner, the minority leader in the House, held up what he said was his copy of the Constitution of the United States. And he said he was going to quote from it, saying in stentorian tones, "We hold these truths to be self-evident," and, you know, he went on. The moron was either drunk or stupid, or both, because that quote is from the Declaration of Independence. How flawed are these rat bastards, right? I mean, it's just maddening how stupid they are. Just stupid. This is a minority leader of the U.S. House of Representatives, a complete dumbass, holding up... never mind. Calls it the Constitution, and he quotes from the Declaration. Thanks, Ron. Now, that's a little bit of humor. This is not funny. I spend an awful lot of my time being pissed off. And I'd like to break from that. I really would. I'd like to make a serious break from being pissed off. But the only way I can do that, I think, is to stop doing what I do for a living. And I'm just not ready to do that yet. However, my level of being pissed off is for the most part manageable. You know, you hear me freak sometimes on this program, granted, but mostly during the day, you know, if I get really, really angry about something, I'll just get out and start walking. I take 2-3 pound weights and start walking. Oh, you don't think that's a lot? You try it, Sparky. But anyway... Today pushed me almost outside of my crazy zone. I was watching some of the video from the Teabagger rally in D.C. Almost the entire clutch of dumbasses from the Republican side were out there. Also, the Senate leadership. They all gave their little speeches. And there's a banner, there's a sign being held up where all of these rat bastards at the podium can see it. You know what the sign was? The sign was a photo taken when the United States military entered Dachau, the death camp in Germany. The picture, blown up, poster size, this is wonderful, a pile of dead, emaciated Jews. There it was. You've seen piles like that before. I say Jews. I don't know if they were Jews or socialists or gypsies or Catholics, but I'm assuming that they were Jewish corpses. Emaciated. You know the pictures. There it was. And the caption underneath or across this hideous photo, the caption said, National Socialist Healthcare, Dachau, Germany, 1945. That's what it said. Now, my inclination right now is to let go with a stream of invective that would just get me off the air. Every single station that carries us, with the exception of XM and Sirius, would drop the program immediately. So I can't do it. I can't say what I really want to say. Eric Cantor, who is the House Minority Whip, guess what? Guess what his... No, he's not Catholic. He's Jewish. Has anybody had the decency in this filthy Republican Party? And they saw the sign. The sign was right there in front of their goddamn faces. Do any of these people... Have you heard anything about this? No, you haven't. Will you? I doubt it. Unless it's on the web, unless it's a YouTube, unless it's, I don't know, unless the bloggers pick up on it. But there it was. What are you going to do about this? What is anybody? All right, you got something to write with? This was Michelle Bachmann's gig, remember? Bachmann. Michelle Bachmann's gig. Okay. I want to give you a couple of phone numbers. Will you please write them down? Please. Michelle Bachmann's phone number. In Washington. Area code for, I'm going to give you three. All the area codes are 202. Michelle Bachmann's number is 225-2331. Michelle Bachmann, 225-2331. Area code 202. John Boner. His phone number is 225-6205. John Boner, 202-225-6205. Eric Cantor, 225-2815. 202 area code, 225-2815. Those are the phone numbers for Michelle Bachmann, John Boner, and Eric Cantor. Would you have a moment tomorrow to call their offices? You know, Michelle Bachmann says, let's get out here and protest this. And then, of course, they went into the people's house, which they certainly have every right to do, these filthy scum. But, you know, the references to Barack Obama as Hitler are, okay, you know, you expect that from these dumbasses. Of course. You know, here's a guy, Barack Obama, who is more of a capitalist than George Bush was. George Bush was a real socialist because he always operated on somebody else's money. He was also a total failure. Barack Obama, who is a capitalist with a capital C, where's all our money going? It's going into Wall Street, right? He's a capitalist. And these ignorant sons of bitches, because twits like, what's his name, Beck and the rest of these people say, he's a communist! You know, they get out there with their toy signs and their ugly invective. Being stupid is one thing. But when you take a photograph of corpses found in the death pits in Dachau and blow it up to poster size, and then label National Socialist Healthcare, Dachau, Germany, 1945. That's over the line. That's it. That's over the line. You filthy right-wing conservative sons of bitches. I'll tell you, you know, I thought my level of contempt for you people had reached rock bottom. Couldn't go any lower. Today I found out that I'm even close to the bottom. God damn all of you. I don't know what to say except that. Damn all of you. You are so sick. Every single one of you are so sick, so degenerate, so ignorant, so out of your crawl space so far you'll never get back in. God damn you. That's all. Piles of emaciated corpses. with the caption "National Socialist Healthcare, Dachau, Germany." Now, if you're 1945, if you're Jewish, I mean, this should hit the sensibilities of most people. But this is United States. There's anti-Semitism is rampant in this country. We all know it. Just like racism is rampant. Just like Muslim bigotry or anti-Arab bigotry is rampant. But if you're Jewish, what are you going to do about this? Are you going to do anything? Is the ADL going to do anything about that at all?
I stepped in the middle of seven sad forests. I've been out in front of a dozen dead oceans. I've been 10,000 miles in the mouth of a graveyard. And it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard rain that's gonna fall.
And put my hand to everything I've meant
with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Ann Jones is with the organization Feminist Majority, and or she writes about them. She's an author of Kabul in Winter. She does humanitarian work in post-conflict war zones around the globe. She works with NGOs, non-government organizations in the United Nations. She has a a piece in the November 9th issue of The Nation that bears some vetting on this program. It's her title is "Remember the Women." She starts out by talking about all this debate that's going on about increasing the number of troops in Afghanistan. And as I read her article, it reminded me of what George Bush and his wife talked about, all the millions of, excuse me, Afghan women who were freed from this horrible oppression when the United States invaded. Let me share with you what Anne has written. "An unsentimental look at the record reveals that for all the fine talk of women's rights since the U.S. invasion, equal rights for Afghan women have been illusory all along. A polite, feel-good fiction that helped to sell the American enterprise at home and cloak in respectability the misbegotten government we installed in Kabul. That is a fiction, that it is a fiction, is borne out by recent developments in Afghanistan. President Karzai's approving a new family law worthy of the Taliban, an American acquiescence in Karzai's new law, and initially his theft of the presidential election, and by the systematic intimidation, murder, or exile of one Afghan woman after another, who behaves as if her rights were real and worth fighting for. A few months ago in Kabul, Karzai gazetted, published, the Shiite Personal Status Law. And it was clear, suddenly clear, that even as we were looking for the best, everything had actually grown worse for women in Afghanistan. Why is this important? At this critical moment, as Obama tries to weigh options against our national security interests, his advisors can't be bothered with, as one U.S. military officer put it to me, quote, the trivial fate of women, end quote. As for some hypothetical moral duty to protect the women of Afghanistan, that's off the table. Yet it is precisely that dismissive attitude shared by Afghan and many American men alike that may have put America's whole Afghan enterprise wrong in the first place. Early on, Kofi Annan, the UN Secretary General, noted that the conditions of women in Afghanistan was, quote, an affront to all standards of dignity, equality, and humanity, end quote. (sighs) Women did seem that they were making strides in the first years after the fall of the Taliban. In 2004, a new constitution declared, quote, the citizens of Afghanistan, whether man or woman, have equal rights and duties before the law, end quote. Westerners greeted that language as a confirmation of gender equality, and to this day, women's so-called equal rights are routinely cited in Western media as evidence of great progress. But not surprisingly, Afghan officials often interpret the article differently. The article in the Constitution. To them, having equal rights and duties is nothing like being equal. The first Chief Justice of the Afghan Supreme Court, formerly a mullah in a Pakistani madrasa, once explained that men have a right to work while women have a right to obey their husbands. The judiciary, an ultra-conservative, inadequate, incompetent, and notoriously corrupt branch of Afghanistan's government, interprets the Constitution by its own lights, and the great majority of women across the country, knowing little or nothing of rights, live now much as they did under the Taliban, except back then there were no bombs. In any case, the Constitution provides that no law may contravene the principles of Sharia law. Muslim fundamentalist law. In effect, mullahs and judges have always retained the power to decide at any moment what rights women may enjoy or not. And being poorly educated, they're likely to factor into the judgment their own idiosyncratic notions of Sharia or Sharia, plus tribal customary laws and the size of proffered bribes. Thus, although some women still bravely exercise liberty and work with some success to improve women's condition, it should have been clear from the get-go that Afghan women possess no inalienable rights at all. Western legal experts who train Afghan judges and lawyers in the law as we conceive it often express frustration that Afghans just don't get it. Afghan judges think the same of them. The paper foundations of Afghan women's rights go beyond national law to include the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, the International Treaty of Civil and Political Rights, and the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women. All these international agreements that delineate and establish human rights around the world were quickly ratified by the Karzai government. The elimination of all forms of discrimination against women, however, well, we'll pick it up when we come back. We're talking about an article that Ann Jones has in the November 9th issue of The Nation that talks about what we're going to send troops over there to fight for. Stay with us.
Hypocrites and liars.
The quality of mercy is not great.
Senators and lawyers.
The quality of mercy is not great.
Victims and heroes.
The quality of mercy is not great.
Redefining anger management. It's Mike Malloy.
From an article by Ann Jones, Remember the Women, she's talking about the women of Afghanistan and what has happened to them. You remember that the Bushes, both George and his wife, talked about how the women of Afghanistan had been liberated because we had invaded, which was an utter lie. Everything that came out of George Bush's mouth was a lie or based in ignorance. So the paper foundations, you know, the documents of Afghan women's rights, include not just the laws of Afghanistan, the secular laws, but also the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, the International Treaty of Civil and Political Rights, and the convention. This is called CEDAW, the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women, CEDAW. But it's a joke. CEDAW requires ratifying governments to submit periodic reports on their progress in eliminating discrimination against women. Afghanistan's first report, due in 2004, has never appeared. That's one more clue to the Karzai government's real attitude toward women, like Karzai's sequestration of his own wife, a doctor with much-needed skills who is kept locked up at home. Hamid Karzai's own wife, kept locked up at home. Given this background, Ann Jones writes, there should have been no surprise when President Karzai first signed off in March on the Shiite Personal Status Law, or as it became known in the Western press, the Marital Rape Law. The bill had been percolating in the ultra-conservative Ministry of Justice in that country ever since the Iranian-backed Ayatollah Asif Mosseini submitted it in 2007. Then last February, Karzai apparently saw the chance to swap passage of the Shiite personal status law for the votes of the Shiites, that is, the Hazara minority, 15 to 20% of the population. It was just one of many deals Karzai consolidated as he kept to the palace while rival presidential candidates stomped the countryside. The SPSL, that's what it called, Shiite personal status law, passed without alteration through the Parliamentary Judicial Committee, another little bunch of ultra-conservative men. When it reached the floor of the parliament, it was too late to object. Some women members succeeded in getting the marriageable age for girls, age 9, revised to 16. Calling it victory, they settled for that. The Supreme Court reviewed the bill and pronounced it constitutionally correct on grounds the justices did not disclose. The rights Afghan women stood to lose on paper and in real life were set forth in the SPSL. Parliamentarian Shinkai Karakhyal alerted a reporter, that's a woman, alerted a reporter at The Guardian of the UK, and the law was denounced around the world for legalizing marital rape by authorizing a husband to withhold food from a wife who fails to provide sexual service at least once every 4 days. The interval there assumes the husband has 4 wives, a practice permitted by Islam and legalized by this legislation. But that's not all the law does. It also denies or severely limits women's rights to inherit, divorce, or have guardianship of their own children. It forbids women to marry without permission and legalizes forced marriages. It legalizes marriage to and rape of minors. It gives men control of all their female relatives. It denies women the right to leave home except for so-called legitimate purposes, in effect giving men the power to deny women to access to work, education, health care, voting, and whatever they please. It generally treats women as property, and it considers rape of women or minors outside marriage as a property crime, requiring restitution to be made to the owner, usually the father or husband, rather than as a crime against the victim. All these provisions are contained in 26 articles of the original bill that have been rendered into English and analyzed by Western legal experts. No doubt, other regressive rules will be discovered in the 223 additional articles of the law if they ever appear in English. In April, a few women parliamentarians spoke out against the law. A group of women, estimated to number about 300, staged a peaceful protest in the street, protected by Kabul's police officers, from an angry mob of hundreds of men who pelted them with obscenities and stones, shouting, "Death to the enemies of Islam." On 27 July, without public announcement, Karzai entered the SPSL, slightly revised but with principal provisions intact, into the official gazette, thereby making it law. Apparently he was betting that with the presidential election only 3 weeks away, the United States and its allies would not complain again. But what about all the women parliamentarians so often cited as evidence of the progress of Afghan women? With 17% of the upper house and 27% of the lower, 85 women in all, you'd think they could have blocked the SPSL, but that didn't happen for many reasons. Many women parliamentarians are mere extensions of the warlords who finance their campaigns and tell them how to vote, and they must vote always in opposition to women's rights. The Human Rights Division of the UN's Assistance Mission in Afghanistan published a report in early July before the SPSL became law, documenting the worsening position of Afghan women, the rising violence against them, and the silence of international and Afghan officials who could defend them. The UN report attributes women's worsening position in Afghan society to the violence the war engenders on two domestic fronts, the public stage and the home. The report is dedicated to the memory of Sitara Achkazai, a member of the Kandahar Provincial Council, an outspoken advocate of women's rights, who was shot to death on April 12th, soon after being interviewed by the UN researchers. The report said she knew her life was in danger, but like many other Afghan women, such as Malalai Kakar, the highest-ranking female police officer in Kandahar, killed herself in September 2008. Sitara Achkazai had consciously decided to keep fighting to end the abuse of Afghan women. Malalai Kakar, the police officer, 40, mother of six, had headed a team of 10 policewomen handling cases of domestic violence. She was killed on the street. In 2005, Kim Sagupta, a reporter with the London Independent, interviewed five Afghan women activists. By October 2008, three of them had been murdered. Threats against women in public life are intended to make them go home, to unliberate them through voluntary house arrest. But if public life is dangerous, so is life at home. Most Afghan women, 87%, according to a UN study, are beaten on a regular basis. The UN researchers looked into the unmentionable subject of rape and found it to be, quote, an everyday occurrence in all parts of the country, end quote, and, quote, a human rights problem of profound proportions, end quote. Outside marriage, the rapists are often members or friends of the family. Young girls forced to marry older men are raped by the old man's brothers and sons. Women and children, young boys are also targets, are raped by people who have charge of them, police, prison guards, soldiers, orphanage, or hospital staff members. The female victims of rape are mostly between the ages of 7 and 30. Many are between the ages of 10 and 20. But some are as young as 3. And most women in Afghanistan are dead by age 42. Women rarely tell anyone because the blame and shame of rape falls on them. Customary law permits an accused rapist to make restitution to the victim's father, but because the question of consent does not figure in the law of sexual relations, the victim is guilty of zina or adultery and can be punished accordingly. A woman raped can be charged with adultery and punished accordingly, sent to jail, or murdered by family members to preserve family honor. The great majority of women and girls in prison at any time are charged with zina, adultery. Most have been raped and or have run away from homes to escape violence. It's probably safe to say, in the absence of statistics, that police, who incidentally are trained by the American for-profit contractor DynCor, police spend more time tracking down runaway women and girls than real criminals. Rapists, on the other hand, as UN investigators found, are often, quote, directly linked to power brokers who are effectively above the law and enjoy immunity from arrest as well as immunity from social condemnation, end quote. Last year, Hamid Karzai pardoned political thugs who had gang-raped a woman before witnesses using a bayonet and who had somehow been convicted despite their good connections. The UN researchers conclude, quote, the current reality is that women are denied their most fundamental human rights and risk further violence in the course of seeking justice for crimes perpetrated against them. For women, human rights are values, standards, and entitlements that exist only in theory and on times, not even on paper, end quote. So there's no talking, no point talking about how women and girls might be affected by the strategic military options remaining on Obama's plate. None of them bode well for women. To send more troops is to send more violence. To withdraw is to invite the Taliban. To play the same, stay the same is not possible now that Karzai has stolen the election in plain sight and made a mockery of American pretensions to an interest in anything but our own skin color and our own pocketbook. Conclusion when we come back.
primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. It's never talked about in American media, the status and condition that women have to endure in Afghanistan or in most of these fundamentalist nations. I don't care if the fundamentalism, I mean, we have it here with the Christian fundamentalists, these Mormon sects that treat women like they were dirt. There are Christian sects who do that. The Muslims, I think, are the worst in the Muslim fundamentalists in treating women as I've always believed, honest to God, that Muslim men are just ashamed of their own sex drive, and so therefore they have to destroy the object of that drive, and that's what they're doing. In most religious fundamentalism, though, even in Judaism, the women do not share the same status as men. Finishing what Ann Jones, the author of Kabul in Winter, wrote for the Nation, and I strongly recommend you get this. It's in the November 9th edition of The Nation. You can probably get it online. Concluding, she says, but while men plan the onslaught of more men in Afghanistan, it's worth remembering what so-called normal life once looked like in Afghanistan, well before the soldiers came. In the 60s and 70s, before the Soviet invasion, when half the country's doctors, more than half the civil servants, and three-quarters of the teachers were women, a peaceful Afghanistan advanced slowly into the modern world through the efforts of all its people. What changed all that was not only the violence of war, but the accession to power of the most backward men in the country, first the Taliban, now the mullahs and mujahideen of the fraudulent, corrupt, Western-designated government that stands in opposition to normal life as it is lived in the developed world and was once lived in their own country. What happens to women is not merely a women's issue. It is the central issue of stability, development, and durable peace. No nation can advance without women, and no enterprise that takes women off the table can come to much good. But it is something that simply is not talked about here. Barack Obama apparently couldn't care less. If he could, he certainly is making a secret of it. The U.S. military has very little use for indigenous women in the countries that corporate America sends them to invade and commit destruction and die. But as any sociologist can tell you, any culture, it doesn't matter what the culture is, any culture that treats women the way the Muslim culture treats women, fundamentalist Islam, that culture will not advance. It will always be warlike. It will always be victimized by its own leaders. It will never reach a stage of development that puts it on, if not an equal footing, at least a better footing with the rest of the world. So the women of Afghanistan who desperately simply want to be citizens of their own country. They want to not be raped. They want to be able to leave a house. They want to, without male guy escorting them, they want to be able to take off those filthy goddamn burqas. Have you ever seen anything as ridiculous? As ridiculous. And I don't care if this pisses off the Muslim people listening to this program. I don't care. That is an obscenity. It's disgusting, for Christ's sake. But according to Ann Jones, who knows because she spent a lot of time in Afghanistan and talked to a lot of women and read a lot of reports, according to Ann Jones, the women of Afghanistan are no freer now than they were 8 years ago or 10 years ago or 12 years ago. There was that moment of flourishing before the Soviets invaded, when, as she said, you know, a third of the doctors in the country were female, half the civil servants, 80% of the school teachers. But first the Soviets and then the United States came stomping into the country destroying everything. We're behaving exactly the way the Soviet Union did. Exactly. It's exactly the same. Exactly. And in that process of destroying whatever social structures were in place, who gets beaten on first? The women. And where does the beating come from? The literal and figurative, metaphorical. It comes from the religious leaders that always pop up in these kinds of situations, always. Look at our country. Look what Obama said during the campaign that everybody would, oh, what'd he say? You know, when you feel threatened, you reach so many people, fundamentalists who have this fundamental religion, they reach for their guns and their Bibles as though either one will solve a goddamn thing. It won't solve anything. Nothing. All right, coming up after this break, we'll be joined by Rich Stockwell, senior producer with Countdown with Keith Olbermann on MSNBC. So stick around. Oh, by the way, this portion of the Mike Malloy Show was brought to you by the 1.6 million members of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees who are fighting for real health care reform. So, all right, we'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Seven past the hour. This is the Malloy program. By the way, if you want more information than you can possibly deal with regarding the situation facing women in Afghanistan, there's a website that has it all. It is the website of the Revolutionary Association of the Women of Afghanistan. It's rawa.org. That's all, just rawa.org. And if you go to this website, you'll probably spend the next 3 or 4 hours checking out what is there. And I strongly recommend you do this if you still believe that you have any voice whatsoever, and even if you don't believe that, in the escalation of this war in Afghanistan, you might want to take a look at what we are going to be sending people, soldiers and Marines, to die for. And part of what they're going to die for is the treatment of women in Afghanistan. Check it out if you have the guts. RAWA.org. Scary stuff. As promised, Rich Stockwell is on the phone with us. He's the senior producer with Countdown with Keith Olbermann on MSNBC. Let me tell you why he's here. Several weeks back, if you remember, we talked about it right after the Olbermann program. He made a plea during his special comment where he talked about health care. Remember that the entire hour was devoted to Oberman's personalizing this health care issue, part of which was around the illness of his parent, his father. He said at the time that he was proposing, well, here's the quote. I propose we, all of us, embrace the selfless individuals at the National Association of Free Clinics. Remember that? Those are the people that travel around and set up these free clinics where they give primary health care to anyone that shows up. Oberman went on, you know them. They conducted the Mass Healthcare Free Clinic in Houston that served 1,500 people. I want a Mass Healthcare Free Clinic every week in the principal cities of the states of the six senators, key to defeating a filibuster against healthcare reform in the Senate. And he went on and talked about that. Well, because of that, Oberman has helped raise $1.2 million. That's the last number I have. It may be higher for free healthcare clinics. As a result, there are new healthcare fairs scheduled for Little Rock, Kansas City, and New Orleans. The one in New Orleans is scheduled for November 14th, and that's on top of health fairs already planned for November 21st in Little Rock and December 9th and 10th in Kansas City. And we've asked Rich Stockwell to come on and talk about how this happened. Hi, Rich.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Mike. I really appreciate it.
Sure, absolutely. I watched that night. Oberman is on here in the East an hour before, the immediate hour right before my program, and it's difficult for me to do last-minute show prep because I'm watching him. And when I saw his appeal that night, it just blew me away to the point where I talked about it on the program, and then Kathy and I made a contribution. How did this all come about?
Well, we, he'd been dealing with his father, his illness for about, I guess, 30 some odd days when he went on,
right?
With the special comment, and so we were talking before a couple of days before he went on, and he said, we need to have a call to action at the end of this. And, what do you think we should do? And so we chatted about it a little bit. And we had a couple weeks prior to that, on a day when he was not there, Nicole Lamoureux, who's the executive director of the National Association of Free Clinics, had come on after the Houston event. And I was just sort of, taken aback by the great work they did. 1,500 some odd people came through that day. And I said, I think we should touch base with them and see if they'd be willing to, do some in the states that, politically, it's really going to matter for the public option. And Keith said, that's a great idea. Let's do it. And so, that's what he went on the air with. And we've been working with, Nicole and raising money and awareness for what they do, ever since.
How did the free clinic operation respond to what Keith talked about? Were they aware that he was going to do that? Did it come as a complete surprise?
We had talked in general terms about what we would like to do with them, and then that night of the special comment, he just mentioned their name.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't actually say that we were going to raise money and everything. And I got a call from Nicole at about 9:20 or so. And she said, she didn't see it. She said, I'm getting all these donations in $5 and $10. And I don't know why, what happened. And so,
right.
she was a little sort of taken aback that night without a direct appeal. They raised, I think it was a little over $35,000. And then we had her on the next night and talked a little bit more in detail. We're up over a little over 1.4 million now, with over 19,000 people who have donated. The response has just been unbelievable. And the response from the people who run the clinics and the board of directors, they've been doing these clinics since the mid 60s with virtually literally no recognition.
Right.
They're on the front line day in and day out. These are people that work in all of our communities. They have over 1,200 clinics across the country.
Mm-hmm.
And, they just never get any recognition. They're not getting any recognition on Capitol Hill. through the whole health care debate and the legislative process. But, you know, they're out there working for everyday people. And most of the people, about 83 or 84% of the people that come through their clinics are working people.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it's just been, you know, they've been really gratified by the response, as have we, quite frankly. We really didn't have any idea what the response would be, but it's been overwhelming.
I'm surprised that Glenn Beck hasn't gone on Fox and attacked this this whole idea, and a bunch of teabaggers haven't shown up to protest, free health care. That's got to be socialism. I haven't noticed Keith promoting this. I may have just missed it, but does he still talk about it on the program?
Yeah, we give updates, every few days here and there when warranted.
Right.
We haven't spent an enormous amount of time. We had Nicole back on when we announced the dates, and we're currently just sort of updating it in fairly brief, just quick updates. Here's the website that you can go to if you want to volunteer. And soon, within a few days, they'll have, if you want to be a patient, because what they do is they do it all by appointment. And the big thing for the Association of Free Clinics is it's not just a one day thing for them.
Mm-hmm.
They'll only do them in places where they have a system in place so that they can give people quality care. They'll see them at each of these events, but then they'll have follow-up appointments with them and follow-up care, which is, you know, critically important, because if you just pull a tooth or you give somebody a prescription for eyeglasses or any other thing, they need the follow-up care.
Sure.
And so we've just been updating it with kind of the finances and the dates that have happened. And then next week we'll start pushing a little bit more, and then we'll have Nicole on again on the Friday night before.
We have to take a quick break here. Rich, can you stick around for one more segment?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, because when we come back, this will give folks a chance to, if they haven't already, to write down the website where they can make a donation or just get information about the free health clinic group. And as has been pointed out, I guess, by Keith, every dollar donated turns into $5 in services when this organization is donated to. We'll be right back. We're talking with Rich Stockwell, senior producer with Countdown with Keith Olbermann. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. We are talking with Rich Stockwell, senior producer for Countdown with Keith Olbermann on MSNBC. We're talking about Olbermann's health clinic initiative. If you again, if you remember several weeks back when this first came up, we talked about it the night that Keith did a special comment that went on the entire hour about healthcare in this country. It was a very impassioned presentation from Keith, who is an impassioned kind of guy, but that particularly was moving. And since that time, as Rich says, about $1.4 million has been raised for these free health clinics to travel around the country. And also, as Rich said during the last segment, the majority of the people coming through are employed. What do they say, Rich, when if anybody questions them about their employment? They just don't have group insurance, or they can't afford it?
Well, the National Association, the free clinics, they don't ask that question. I mean, in terms of there's no means testing.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll do the survey just to see, but they don't go beyond that to find out
right.
what the situation is.
Yeah.
You know, as we know, a lot of employers are either small businesses that don't offer it, or they control workers' hours so that they don't have to offer it.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the largest employers in the country do that, where they don't have to offer benefits because they keep employees' hours below a certain level, you know, 30 hours a week or whatever it is in various states, so that they don't actually have to pay for benefits.
Mm-hmm.
And so these are basically working poor people who just can't get insurance.
Right.
Because of their salaries.
What, I know Rachel fairly well. I met her parents, and when she worked at Air America, we used to spend some time together traveling around the country. I've never met Oberman, but I can tell by the way he presents his program, in much the same way as Rachel does hers, and, a couple other people, Dylan Radigan, a couple other people on your network that, they're very dedicated to this idea of healthcare. I guess this is an insider's question, and you don't have to answer it if you choose not to, but how does Keith Olbermann react to, off camera, offset, when the program's not on, to the craziness that's out here regarding healthcare? There was another example of it today. There was a sign held up at this rally in Washington by these right-wingers that showed one of those hideous photographs of dead people, probably Jews, in one of those open pits at Dachau. And the headline, or the caption underneath it was National Socialist Healthcare, Dachau, 1945. I mean, this is beyond obscenity. This is into insane reactions. I guess what I'm looking for is what Keith and you and the rest of the people there, what you talk about when the cameras are off.
Well, it's funny. A lot of people ask me that question about, what's Keith like off camera?
Mm-hmm.
And he's really not much different than he is on camera.
I wouldn't think.
His outrage over sort of the Tea Partiers and the misinformation campaigns and mm-hmm. the signs like that that you talked about, he's expressed that pretty explicitly on air. And that's pretty much the way it is off air as well. A lot of us were working to get the show ready, and we're watching what's going on all day long.
Right.
And you just can't believe that in a country as wealthy as this one, the issue of a fundamental right of health care, we're not asking for, this huge 35% tax increase for the wealthy.
Mm-hmm.
It's a minor deal in a really wealthy country for people who just need basic health care.
Right.
And yet we have people out there carrying signs like you just mentioned, which I didn't see today. But, we've seen this kind of thing going on since August. It's manufactured outrage. These are people who don't have health care, but believe that capitalism is, God's gift to the world.
Mm-hmm.
And they are so being used by huge corporations who are profiting off of their misfortune of these very people who are out there rallying.
Yeah, and that's something. Can you stay through one more break?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, because we have one coming up here in just about 20 seconds. One of the things that we rail against on this program is the willful ignorance. It is not difficult for anyone to get the information that they need to make an informed decision. Oh, my God, I sound like, I sound like somebody in a therapy session. But to make an informed decision about these issues like healthcare, like committing troops to Afghanistan, like NAFTA, like the moving of jobs out of this country, on and on and on and on. I have lost patience, Rich. I can't deal with this kind of willful ignorance. Oh, my goodness. All right, let us take a break. We'll be right back, and we'll get the website and chat a little bit more if you can stick around. Our guest is Rich Stockwell. He's senior producer for the Overman Program. Countdown. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
It's Mike Malloy.
Probably not tonight. It's 26 before the hour. And again, we're talking with Rich Stockwell, senior producer for a Countdown with Keith Oberman on MSNBC. And we're talking about the issue of the National Association of Free Clinics. And Keith Oberman's comments about and requests for donations to this organization. I got an email from Dana, Rich, in, Virginia, the DC metro area, and, he mentions the National Association of Free Clinics is based in Alexandria, I believe. But he also includes, a link there for anyone who wants to see, if you did not see, the hour-long, special comment by Keith Oberman. It's available on YouTube. It's in 7 sections. Just go to youtube.com, use their search engine, Keith Oberman special comment. You'll find it. You'll probably find all of them, but you'll find this one. And it certainly, should be required viewing for anyone who, can take a pulse. You know, if you're a right winger, you were not interested in this. What is the website, Rich?
Well, you can get to freeclinics.us, and that'll give you information on the upcoming events in Arkansas and New Orleans.
Is that singular free clinic or plural? Yes, clinics?
It's free clinics, plural.
Plural,
.us.
Okay. .us.
Or you can get to it through countdown.msnbc.com, and that our site also has the special comment up as well.
Okay. So either of those websites, freeclinics.us or countdown.msnbc.com. Now, is that either one of those websites where people can make a contribution?
They can only make the contribution at freeclinics.us.
Okay.
And there's also a link there if you would like to volunteer at either of those events. Either as a regular citizen who wants to come in, mm-hmm. or doctors and nurses, people who are in the healthcare industry, they can get information about volunteering to help out.
Mm-hmm.
Again, in New Orleans on the 14th and Little Rock, Arkansas, on the 21st.
Oberman also said, excuse me, that he wanted these senators to these 6 senators. Who are key to defeating a filibuster. I realize that's changed now with this move that Lieberman has made. But he said, quote, Senators Lincoln and Pryor should see what healthcare poverty is really like in Little Rock. Senator Baucus should see it in Butte. Ben Nelson should see it in Lincoln, Nebraska. Senator Landrieu should see it in Baton Rouge. And Senator Reed to see it in Las Vegas. Which is an excellent idea, but on the other hand, as we know at this point, pretty much, I hate to, be Chicken Little or, somebody's revealing something we all don't know. Most of these senators don't give a damn. They really don't. I honestly believe that health insurance reform, which is what this is all about, is tainted by the fact that every single person involved in this, in the U.S. House and Senate, are, with a couple of exceptions, but are coated with the money from the medical, industrial, pharmaceutical, whatever you want to call it, complex.
Well, that's true, and Keith has pointed that out many, many times on his show.
Mm-hmm.
The goal here, and we set the bar very low, was you claim to be a Democrat. Just don't stand with Republicans on cloture. Now, most of them, except for Blanche Lincoln and Mary Landrieu, have and Ben Nelson maybe, have said they will allow the bill to get to the floor.
Mm-hmm.
So at least there's a debate. Even Lieberman has come that far. What they haven't said, except for Lieberman, and he's now a special case, is whether they would stand with Republicans to stop a cloture vote to end debate and allow an up or down vote where a simple majority can get the public option through and get the whole bill through.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Lieberman is out saying that he is any bill with a public option, he will not vote for. And that only gives them 59 votes unless they get somebody, Snow or somebody, to cross over. So, so that was the goal, is just don't stand with Republicans and allow an up or down vote. Keith wasn't even saying, you know, you must vote for this bill. He was just saying, don't be a Republican for one day.
Right. Right.
And look, the money issue is everybody in the Senate almost has, you know, that's another whole other kettle of fish. There's an awful lot of money in politics that comes from a lot of different places, but the healthcare industry has spent enormous amounts.
Yeah, they have. What would be your personal, not as a producer, not as somebody involved in the kind of media work you do, but what do you think is the reason so many people who are, in my opinion, misinformed, the resistance to this? Where does this come from? This seemingly unending, raucous, screaming, foot-stomping resistance to health insurance reform. Jesus. I mean, where do you think it comes from, Rich?
Well, I really believe that that it is, you know, the Republicans have been running on a platform of government is bad, so elect us and we'll prove that it can't do anything, and so people believe that government can't do anything. They just they don't look at programs like Medicaid and Medicare, Social Security, which are huge safety nets and hugely successful for an enormous amount of people in this country. And so they just believe the rhetoric that government is the problem and can't be a solution.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, quite frankly, I think, why Republicans are fighting tooth and nail. If good health reform is passed, and I don't think we're there yet with just the public option, but it's a step. But if it is passed, and if people actually see a change in their lives, Republicans realize that they're in big trouble in the upcoming elections. And by upcoming, I mean the next 30 years.
Right.
They realize that this is a generational problem that they will have. Look at what happened after Medicare was passed, and they were running the same exact campaigns back during Medicare. It's socialized medicine, you won't recognize America, on and on and on. And that has been a hugely successful program, and ask anybody over 65 now if they're willing to give it up, and nobody will.
Well, it's been one hell of an experience for me to witness how this issue has been chewed to pieces by the right wing in this country, and especially this collection of lunatics on Fox News Channel. And not to mention, dozens of the usual suspects on the internet. But the reaction of people, people who could genuinely benefit from health insurance reform, my God, who stand there and insist on their willful ignorance, insist on going along with this right wing garbage. And it's been a shock to me. I've been in this business 25 years. I thought I'd seen just about everything, where it concerned the idiocy of, segments of the U.S. population on so many different issues, either idiocy or ignorance or stupidity. I don't know, but it just pisses me off that this, these issues come up that are so critical to advancing a quality of life in this country, and they get shredded by lies and distortions. You know, I thought the death panel thing, the Michelle Bachmann thing, was just like, oh my God. You know, this is just going to fall to the ground and quiver and die. And guess what? No, it didn't. So it's just astonishing to me, Rich. I don't know. That is the media dude's lament, right?
Yeah, but if you look at what's happened with them, I think, you know, the during August and the recess and all the town halls and everything.
Right, right.
I think that they're killing themselves.
I hope.
Well, but look, independence. They're killing themselves electorally. But, you know, independents look at these people and say, well, that's not reasonable. That's not a fair way to behave during a debate. I mean,
right.
They disagree with it. But I really think, Mike, I think they should keep it up. They should raise their voices louder. And we should highlight who and what they are and what they stand for.
I hear you.
They don't believe in America.
Yeah, that's the absolute truth. Rich, thanks a lot for hanging out here a little bit tonight and talking with us. And once we come back from our break, we'll go ahead and push those websites again. Thanks again. Good luck. I really enjoy your program.
Thanks so much for putting me on, Mike. I appreciate it.
Okay, Rich. Take care. Bye-bye. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us.
Because liberal is a good word. It's more Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. Those two websites again, Free Clinics, plural, freeclinics.us or countdown.msnbc.com if you want some further information about what we were talking about with Rich for the past 45 minutes. I just got this. It dovetails so disgustingly with what we were talking about, the plight of Afghan women. I know a lot of people say, well, come on, Malloy, this is the United States. Well, that's true. The first polygamist sect member to face criminal trial following that raid at the ranch in West Texas last year, the Yearning for Zion Ranch. That was the Mormons. The first guy to face trial has been convicted of sexual assault of a child. Jurors took little more than 2 hours to convict Raymond Jessup, 38, of sexually assaulting a teen with whom he had a so-called spiritual marriage. Jessup allegedly has 9 wives. He faces a bigamy charge, but that case to be tried later. The girl in the assault case at the time, now she's 21. She was previously in a spiritual marriage, quote, quote, with Jessup's brother, before being, quote, reassigned, end quote, to Jessup when she was 15. Jesus Christ. She became pregnant at age 16. Jessup, who had been free on bond during the trial, was immediately handcuffed and led across the Schleicher County Courthouse Square to the jail after his conviction. Jurors were expected to return to court Monday to begin deciding his sentence. He faces up to 20 years. I hope he gets all of it, frankly. Bastards. The Associated Press article that accompanies this has a photograph of the swine standing out, I guess, in front of the courtroom in his unbuttoned collared white shirt with a dung-eating smirk on his face as if to say, hey, look, you know, I just happen to like 13-year-old little girls. You got a problem with that? I hate these people. I don't care if they're fundamentalists. Latter-day Saints or fundamentalist Muslims or fundamentalist Baptists. I don't care. They're disgusting. You know, what this guy was looking for was a little harem, you know, some of that young stuff, you know, this nonsense about, it's in the Book of Mormon. Oh, bite my Book of Mormon. What the hell are you talking about? You're just a dirty, filthy man who wants to get in the pants of as many young girls as you possibly can. So you use your so-called, you know, God says I should do it, sweetie. Lay down. It's difficult sometimes acknowledging one's race and one's gender, isn't it? Jesus Christ. So there he is. Raymond Jessup. Spiritual marriage, my ass. Jonathan is in Melbourne, PA, holding on forever. Hello.
Yeah, it's interesting that the financial relationship between the lobbyists for the health insurance companies and the warlords in Afghanistan and the politicians there, it seems very similar because the warlords are financing their campaigns and asking for favors, you know, subjugation of women. And the lobbyists are financing or helping, trying to finance politicians' campaigns and asking for, you know, little regulation or things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it just seems so, like, it's like when the shoe's on the other foot, we don't seem to notice. But when it's in another country,
right?
It's such an obvious correlation.
Okay. I agree.
I mean, it just seems like, have you ever read the book A Distant Mirror by Barbara Tuchman?
No, I haven't. Although I've seen pieces of it quoted anyway in The Nation, but no, I haven't read it.
Well, all the way back then, they were doing the same thing where war financing, whatever, the whole thing where the military industrial complex is like, oh, you need to go over and, you know, raid these people because we need funding for weapons or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like it just seems like it's like we've got all this technology and really complex sociological systems, and yet we still face the same problems that we did hundreds of years ago.
Yeah, yeah. Well, at least 100 years ago. I think the whole problem stems from the time, the 1890s, late 1890s, when the U.S. made a decision to become an empire and started this imperialist attack on anyone that we could launch an imperialist attack. Go ahead.
Do you think that what we're doing is we're trying to decide at this point whether we want to be a democracy within a capitalist system or a capitalist system within a democracy?
I don't think either one. I think what we're heading for is what Mussolini called corporatism. I think it is a softer form of fascism. I don't think there will be death camps in this country. I don't think that, although I could be wrong on that, it doesn't take long for fascism to degrade from a political system into a social system. So I wouldn't completely rule out death camps for gays or death camps for liberals or death camps for apostate conservatives or death camps. You understand what I'm saying? I think we're moving toward a totalitarian form of government where the wealthy class will control just about everything. And the American people have been so conditioned to shut up and mind their own business and sit down that it will probably just keep going and going and going. Hey, listen, Jonathan, I have to leave it there. I appreciate what you had to say, and thanks for holding on. We'll talk again, for sure. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Welcome back. It is 6 and a half past the hour. This is the Malloy program. You know what we're talking about. Let's take a few phone calls. Larry is in Columbus, Ohio, listening on XM. Larry, welcome to the program.
How are you?
Good.
I turned on the station, just flipping on, and I heard a guy ask you, where do you think this is going? And you said something to the effect that it's going to be corporate fascism, and that you wouldn't rule out having camps for gays or for liberals. Isn't that what you said?
That's exactly what I said. You got a problem with that?
Yeah, I think that's lunacy.
Okay.
You guys criticize Beck and you criticize people like that. How is that any different than what those idiots said?
Larry, I don't know how to handle your phone call. I really don't, but I'll make an effort. What I said was corporate fascism, as planned by the in this country, by the ruling class in this country. If you're not aware, it's been happening for the past, ever since Reagan, then you're just brain dead. But if corporatism, what Mussolini called corporatism, if it finally takes complete control in this country, it's very close to it now, it'll be an American style capitalism, a fascism, sort of a hybrid of capitalism and fascism. And what I said was, the only difference between that sort of fascism and what was practiced in Germany, since that's the model of all this horrible stuff, is that there are no death camps in, American fascism will be without the death camps. However, I added, I can certainly foresee a point in time where those kinds of camps would be used for liberals, homosexuals. And the reason I say homosexuals, are you completely unaware of the efforts to dehumanize gay people? It is very similar to the way the Jews were dehumanized in Germany before the death camps. Are you not aware of that?
That is crazy.
All right, goodbye. I mean, Jesus Christ, why do I waste my time with schmucks like this? I mean, do me a favor, Larry, don't call the program again. Go away, go away. Switch to a different station on XM, okay? They've got 150 stations. Find something that will satisfy your little amoeba-like mind. Leave us alone, okay? Just leave me alone. I don't understand why people like Larry don't get what I mean. Every effort is made to dehumanize people by the fascist right in this country. Larry is obviously been shot full of political, what's that stuff you get when you go to the dentist? Novocaine. He is totally unaware of it, I guess. Now, if he were in one of the targeted groups, if he were a liberal, if he were a gay person, if he were a person of color, if he were, an immigrant, an illegal immigrant, then Larry might be able to understand. But Larry obviously is a middle class, right wing, probably overweight white guy. And his world is described. It's like a circle. He listens to Fox News, like he said. He just happened to be flipping through. He listens to Fox News. He's probably a Becker, or a Limbite, or whatever. And his worldview has been totally, completely, absolutely demolished, totally corrupted. As far as the possibility of death camps, you're damn right. Isn't that what these right wingers have been screaming about? I mean, isn't that a preemptive strike? Oh, FEMA is building. No, they've already been built, folks. Death camps. They're going to be used as death. Against whom? My statement was simply, I can foresee a time when corporate fascism in this country would put those camps to use. And yeah, well, you know, why not murder gay people? Why not murder Jews? I mean, come on. The most civilized country in Europe did it. Oh, well. You know, wallow in your ignorance. I don't give a damn. I just wish you people would stop calling me. I really do. You're not entertaining. You don't advance the program. And I think you're all just crazier than loons. Bob is in Clifton, Tennessee.
I think France and Holland and Sweden has all claimed they were just as civilized. How are you, Mike?
Right, but they didn't do, of course, what the Nazis did.
Of course not, of course. So it could happen in any civilized country.
Yes, and I don't know why the average right-wing, brain-dead American white guy can't understand that. I mean, why so quick to jump up and say that would never happen? I'm sure that they were German intellectuals.
Well, I think I understand why.
Why?
I'll tell you a little story.
Short, okay.
A short story. In 1970, I went to the first Earth Day.
Right.
Union Square Park in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a farce. Of course. It had a car that had only a driver's seat, and the whole inside of the car and the trunk and everything was full of lead-acid batteries. It had other such foolishness. Because, you know, at that time, Nixon was trying to use the environmental thing. The only reason he went and started the EPA was because he was trying to use the environment, concern for the environment, to take the population's mind off of and to take the headlines off of Vietnam.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. I
well,
certainly don't disagree with that.
This Earth Day was going on. Lindsay was mayor of New York.
Right.
And there were 21 Black Panthers in jail being held with very vague charges, which most people considered to have been fabricated, and I think were later proven to be.
Mm-hmm.
And as Lindsay came walking by me, a very small crowd there, but he made his appearance with his entourage. I stood up and I said, "Free the Panther 21. Free the Panther 21. Mayor Lindsay, give the Panthers a hearing," because they weren't even bringing them before the judge. One of his bodyguards came and grabbed me by the shoulders. And, I mean, this was some kind of a bull moose fellow.
Right,
very large,
right.
And started shaking me and shoving me and walking me backwards, all the while yelling at me, "Mike, quit manhandling me. Get your hands off of me. Stop roughing me up." Let me tell you that it left me speechless.
Right, I'll bet.
He took the words out of my mouth.
Right.
And I wasn't able to respond. That's what all of these things are that are going on. And when Larry called you and he said that what you were saying sounded like just like what the right wing is saying.
Right.
The difference is that they are using it as a fabricated tactic, whereas you are describing trends that are demonstrable.
Right, and this is the part I was talking about this earlier in the program with our guest. This kind of willful ignorance, this insistence from some of these right wingers that their eyes be shut. And the only thing that comes out of their mouths or what goes into their ears, the only thing that goes into their ears is this garbage from right-wing radio and television. Larry is a classic example. All of these right-wing callers who occasionally decide they're going to call Malloy, every one of them is a clear demonstration of what has happened in this country since the advent of total right-wing radio and television.
Perhaps so, but Larry may not have been a right-winger, actually, but rather just someone who is hearing both sides saying the same thing and not being able to discern which one was describing a reality.
Well, that's true. But to me, that is a right-winger who is totally off his nut. Anyone who can't look at the last 30 years and decide which party is hell-bent or which attitude is hell-bent on bringing corporate fascism to this country and which party is cooperating but not quite as hell-bent is somebody that needs to sit down and take stock of what they see as truth and not truth. Hey, I got to leave it there. Thanks a lot, Bob. Take care. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Get well, hang around the inkwell, hang bell, heart to tail of anything is gonna
Screaming with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Prairie 2's missive tonight would... Oh, by the way, this portion of the Mike Malloy Show is brought to you by the 1.6 million members of the American Federation of State, County, Municipal Employees who are fighting for real health care reform. Prairie 2's missive tonight. And I had planned on talking about this predatory operation, Goldman Sachs, that is leading the charge to turn this into a fascist corporate state, but we're running out of time. Prairie 2 touches on it. Hospitals are having a hard time getting enough swine flu vaccine for their high-risk patients, such as pregnant women and sick kids. Corporations, on the other hand, have no problem getting plenty of vaccine for the in-house clinics that serve only their executive office buildings. We are rapidly approaching a Soviet-style economy where the party elite get the best of everything and the rest of us wait in line. The chant from the teabaggers is that the government can't handle health care because the vaccine did not appear as promised. They ignore the fact that the vaccine is being done by the same corporations that the teabaggers want to run their health care. These companies apparently either lied about their ability to manufacture vaccine or they are deliberately withholding the vaccine to embarrass Obama. The band U2 put on a free concert at the Brandenburg Gate tonight commemorating the fall of the Berlin Wall. But since MTV planned to use one of the songs live for the European Music Awards, they put up a 2-meter wall of steel to block public access. This ensured that nothing inconvenient like teeming masses of free people got in the way of corporate profits. Initial unemployment claims got down to 512,000 last week for the first time in 10 months. It needs to get below 350,000 to expect any jobs to be created, and over 200,000 were officially lost last month. The real number is much higher. Congress finally extended unemployment benefits after months of foot-dragging by the Republicans. And today, the American Association of Retired Persons came out to endorse the health insurance bill coming from the House. But since they are basically an insurance company themselves, the devil will likely be in the details. Thousands of teabaggers showed up on Capitol Hill to attempt to intimidate Congress into maintaining the status quo. They got a pretty good crowd for a weekday. And there were almost as many teabaggers as there are lobbyists, literally. Guess which group Congress is really intimidated by? The teabaggers are afraid Obama will make them slaves or drag them before death panels. If they only knew, but they never will. Pray too. Yeah. And regarding the situation in Afghanistan for women, I got an email from a guy who was in the Soviet Army. Well, let me read it. Colonel Dolgov, who writes, "Dear Mr. Malloy, I love you and your show, but today you are wrong. Why, until 1979, women in Afghanistan have rights and freedoms? Because the authorities were people which supported the Soviet Union in future, this Northern Alliance. At the same time, religious fanatics from Pakistan supported U.S. with one goal, to destroy pro-Soviet regime in Afghanistan. Knowing this, Soviets decided to enter in the troops and help progressive government in Afghanistan. I had the honor of being one of the first warriors internationalists who entered Afghanistan in 1980. American imperialism later created the Osama bin Laden and others. You cannot say that we brought in Afghanistan Islamists. U.S. did. We have been building schools and hospitals, defended the rights of women and the ordinary people, and you supplied arms and money to Osama. What is now happening in Afghanistan, we must say thanks to the United States." I wrote back and said, "Sorry, Colonel, but the truth is the Soviet invasion brought as much death and destruction to Afghan people as well as Soviets as the U.S. is now bringing. The Soviet invasion was political. The U.S. invasion is centered on the theft of Caspian Sea oil and gas. Both are to be condemned. Please make no excuse for the Soviet invasion. I make no excuse for the U.S. invasion. And then he wrote back, good answer, agree, but you spoke about woman rights. Soviet regime was wrong in many things, but always support woman rights. Best regards, the colonel. And then I got this from Terry in Seattle, who writes a few words about my travels in Afghanistan in 1970. I and my female companion traveled overland from Europe to South Asia. We carried backpacks, traveled second class on trains and buses, staying in hotels that served the ordinary budget travelers of the countries we were in. On crossing the Bosphorus into Asia, she changed her appearance only by wearing a bandana over her hair, but otherwise, we dressed as we had in the U.S. and Europe. Jeans, sandals, you get the picture. After the rail lines came to an end in eastern Iran, we took a van to the border station and arrived after the customs office was closed. We crossed the road to the tea house across the way and got tea, as well as one of Afghanistan's main specialties. Put up our tent in the median between the in and outbound roads. The next stop was Herat, where we spent a few days wandering the streets, then one night in Kandahar, wandered around the town before getting on the next day's bus for the rest of the trip to Kabul, where we spent a couple of weeks. There's a little bit more here. I'll give it to you when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Just had another cup of coffee. Here's Mike Malloy.
26 before the hour, I'm reading from an email that Terry in Seattle sent in about his and his female companion's travels in Europe and South Asia back in 1970. The point of his email is coming up here. Let me back up just a little bit. After the rail lines came to an end in eastern Iran, we took a van to the border station and arrived after the customs office was closed. We crossed the road to the tea house across the way and got tea as well as one of Afghanistan's main specialties. We then put up our tent in the median between the in and outbound roads. Next stop was Herat, where we spent a few days wandering the streets, then one night in Kandahar, wandered around the town before getting on the next day's bus for the rest of the trip to Kabul, where we spent a couple of weeks. We never encountered any hostility. We were treated courteously. And although the language barrier was almost complete, we found the people we encountered to be welcoming and helpful. You can find much more detail in my Democratic Underground Journal under the username of Cons Are Liars. But I just wanted to confirm the facts about Afghanistan before the U.S. CIA destabilized it by importing and arming the religious zealots. Terry in Seattle. Go to Democratic Underground, get to the journal section, and his username is Cons Are Liars, A-R-E. Cons Are all spelled out if you want to check out Terry's writing. Thanks, Terry. Gordon in Oklahoma City writes, this is regarding the freak that called in and told me I was outrageous for suggesting death camps. Gordon writes, Mike, one of the local Baptist preachers in Oklahoma City advanced the idea of so-called re-education camps for gay people. This same minister is the husband of a vile, homophobic state representative who made the international news last year by claiming, quote, gays are more dangerous than the terrorists, unquote. Also, we should remember what Mel White, who was a ghostwriter for Jerry Falwell, said about the goals of the religious right concerning gay people. White told a group of LGBT members, quote, they want you dead, end quote. I can go on, but don't have the time. The threat against the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgendered community is very real, and I expect it to get worse thanks to enablers like your caller, Larry. I can give plenty of other examples, but we'll stop here for lack of time. Gordon. Yeah, I don't need to have, thanks Gordon, I don't need ever, under any circumstances whatsoever, ever do I have a need to be corrected by a right-winger about anything I say on this program, no matter how outrageous it sounds to the little virginal ears. These people are haters. The whole entire right wing in this country, all the Republicans, the conservatives, I don't care what they call themselves, they're ignorant, stupid, and everything that comes out of their mouths is a lie, and they themselves are complete, absolute cowards. They are willing to buy into and absorb and suck up and eat all this garbage that is dumped on them by right wing talk radio and television. And it's no wonder. I mean, I guess were I a more advanced soul, I would feel pity and sorrow for them, but I don't. I hold them in utter contempt and just wish they would get the goddamn hell off my planet. Kay writes, "Hi, Mike. I went to get my hair cut this afternoon. As I was waiting, I couldn't help seeing what was on the television. Nancy Grace from Headline News was doing her usual irresponsible reporting about the crime of the day. This one involved a baby who was kept in a box under a bed by her aunt for 12 hours and survived. Miss Grace's commentary was as follows, quote, bombshell tonight. In the last hours, cops blast into the home of a babysitter and to their shock discover a tiny baby, Shannon, just 11 pounds, trapped, hidden and locked inside a wooden chest. No bottle, no pillow, no stuffed toys. But the miracle tonight is there is a God, 7-month-old baby Shannon alive, end quote. Really, Nancy? Kay writes, that proves there's a God? Then why was this baby put in the box in the first place? And how about the thousands of American kids who are not found alive? Or those children who were tortured in front of their parents in order to make them confess to American officials, the ones Glenn Greenwald wrote about? Or how about the hundreds of thousands of kids who have been blown away by American bombs over the decades? I just can't stand it. From Glenn Beck to Sean Hannity to Nancy Grace, this is what passes for news in America. The comment made by Mark on your last Friday's program, the one about malignant apathy, has been rattling around in my head all week long because I keep seeing evidence of it everywhere. Hopefully, I'll be able to actually put my thoughts down on paper this weekend. It's really, really upsetting to see just how uninformed the kids are, and it seems to be getting worse. It's also not surprising in light of what passes as news in this country, which serves to anesthetize them to anything that matters. Kay Petrini, our education correspondent, who will be sending in a report card when she can, right? All of our correspondents, of course, are under no obligation because the pay sucks. When we get stuff from Kay or Bob or Bridget or Bruce or Sharon, whoever, we're just eternally grateful. Barry is in Salem, New Hampshire. Barry, welcome to the program.
Mike, you're a national treasure.
Okay.
I'm a podcast member. I want to remind everybody, just in case you forgot, to sign up and become a member and support this guy. We need to support people like you.
Yes, yes, yes. Go to MikeMalloy.com. All the information is there. Thank you, Barry.
That is why I called.
I know.
Larry, his call just struck me in a certain way. And I'm Jewish, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And my background inherently just listens to a guy like that and says, you know, I know people that have tattoos in their arms that survived the camp.
Mm-hmm.
And they tell me that people sat and discussed and went back and forth and agonized over what they should do and how what actions they should take. Well, everything started to slowly close in on it.
Right.
It's awfully hard to get that perspective, okay, when you don't have people like you in mainstream media telling the truth, telling what's going on. You have to go to places like Media Matters. You got to go to Truth Out. You got to search for the real facts of what's going on. Very, very scary for people when that starts to happen. You got guys like Pat Buchanan, Lee Atwater, and Karl Rove that mainstreamed bigotry and hatred. They took it where it used to be an undercurrent,
mm-hmm.
and they've elevated it now. It's now become mainstream And unfortunately, I hate to say it, and it's not Obama's fault, but the election of a black man as president, it like turned a switch on. It turned a switch on. There's something that's radically changed now.
That's true.
That he's president. And you can feel it. Mm-hmm. I feel it in my bones, this visceral hatred.
Mm-hmm.
Just seems to come up. And if it isn't black people, it's Jews. If it isn't Jews, it's Muslims. If it isn't Muslims, it's gay.
Mm-hmm.
And they're searching for targets constantly. They're constantly shifting. Since they don't have, this is the thing that I don't understand about the Republican Party, that, you know, let's use a fictional character called an honest conservative, somebody who actually thinks that big business is good,
mm-hmm.
and there's a way to control it, and it can be ethical, blah, 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 like it was 30 years ago,
right.
40, 50 years ago,
right.
some sort of mythical creature.
Yeah.
How these people can look at what the party's becoming and see that you have religious extremists and crazy people that have taken over, and they just keep on painting bullseyes on everything.
Mm-hmm.
If it isn't Nancy Pelosi, it's someone else. They're searching desperately because they don't have any solutions to the problems we face today. None. Zero. They have no solutions.
And that's where it is so easy and awfully redundant and very tiresome to draw the comparisons between that and Germany in the 20s and 30s, where the entire nation was confused. It was this is a nation that produced some of the greatest music and art and literature and philosophy in the history of the human race.
And something broke.
And something went berserk. Something snapped.
This is what happens when a society becomes berserk. They disconnect from civilization. Is what happens. This is a disconnect. Nazism was a disconnect from what had become generally accepted practices of civilization. This is what the right. This is Palinistas. This is what Sarah Palin represents.
Right. And the part that is so freaky to me is that. Aside from all the aphorisms about those who forget history are doomed to repeat it, forget all that. The fact that people in our society, our country, at this time in our history, can't see the parallels. When somebody calls me and says, well, that was an outrageous statement, there'll never be death camps for gay people. I mean, there would never be death camps for Jews in Germany either. Because
they don't read history.
Right.
They have not paid attention to history.
They
or
don't.
They're dismissing it out of hand.
They don't. Hey, listen, I got to leave. Barry, thanks.
Thank you so much, Mike.
All right. I appreciate what you had to say. Stay with us. Quick break here. I should have asked Barry what he thought of that sign today. Good God. We'll be right back.
Members of the master race, whole nations enslaved and debased, remember. Blood and toil and sweat and tears, remember. The nightmare lasted 6 long years, remember. The world drowned in the bloody tide of war and death and genocide. 57 million died, remember. It's happening again, it's happening again.
Boom, 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 boom. Bang, 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 bang. Boom, 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 boom. Bang, 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 bang. I love the way you walk, and I love the way you talk. When you walk that walk, and you talk that talk.
10 before the hour. Thanks to our crew. You know who you are. I haven't mentioned the mass killing at Fort Hood, Texas today, and there's a number of reasons why I haven't. But Darren in North Carolina writes, I've been listening here and there tonight and have just one comment to make regarding the Fort Hood tragedy. Speculation on how and why it happened aside, in conjunction with other issues, suicides, retention, etc., it does tell us one thing. Our military is hurting. Nobody else will say this, but I will. A mass murder of this magnitude on a military base is pretty close to a 9/11 in that it is totally unexpected and unprecedented. Something is very, very wrong here. And that is very, very dangerous. Enough, enough, enough. No more dead soldiers. None. Done. Enough. Enough. I just can't go there regarding that tragedy. I couldn't believe it when I started seeing it. Greg in Wisconsin writes, "Hi, Mike, I'm totally with you on not mentioning a damn thing about the Fort Hood incident today, but I am going to write an article about it, so I've done a little digging. According to a report in the New York Times back in January 2008, there were 121 cases in which veterans of Afghanistan and Iraq committed a killing in this country. I'm looking for more current stats on that. My article is going to be something like, do we need another reason to end these wars?" Greg in Wisconsin. Bob is in Minneapolis listening online. Hey, Bob.
Hey there.
Hi.
So you had that one fellow that a lot of us are reacting to who was saying, you know, there'd never be camps for gays in America.
Right.
And my comment is, what do you call our prison system except camps for blacks in America?
That's very true.
You know?
Yeah, sure.
I mean, I'm looking at prisonsucks.com. They've got a lot of statistics out there. They say 12 out of 100 blacks end up in prison in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just insane.
And I think the number of African American men who are either A, in prison, B, on parole, or C, on probation exceeds the 12% considerably.
Mm-hmm.
As a percentage of their population.
Exactly. I mean, it's ridiculous. It boggles the mind. And what I also think is interesting is the way our first black president has moved quickly to address this crisis in the black community. He's been out there and actually I don't think he's done a thing. But you know, what do you expect, right?
Right. Well, the thing that is understandable yet irritating, about Obama's comments on race is that he does the right thing in addressing the African American community, that more needs to be done where it concerns youth and respect for education and so on and so forth. But he doesn't go far enough. First of all, you know, every effect has a cause, doesn't it? I mean, when we look at that horrendous issue of racial imbalance in this country, racial imbalance, lynching, whatever you want to call it, if we don't precede the solution with addressing the cause of how this entire segment of our population got to where it is, if we only address the second half and not the first half, that's not, first of all, it's not logically correct. A, B, it's insensitive, and C, I think it leaves people in that community completely lost. Like, you know, I didn't ask to have laws written against my very existence for 300 years. I didn't ask to be a piece of property. I did, you know, on and on and on and on. So, and I think the reason Obama doesn't address this head on is because a couple of times he tried to, and he did it as kind of an off the cuff spontaneous remark, like calling the arrest of Gates, the Harvard professor, as being you know, a stupid move on the part of the police. Of course, it was a stupid move on the part of police. But look how he was eviscerated as soon as he said it.
Yeah.
So it's an awful situation. You know, race is one thing in this country that I honestly believe will never be resolved. The only way to resolve it is massive 3 or 4 generation intermarriage and be done with it, so that nobody can ever truly say, you know, I'm Caucasian or I'm African or I'm Latino or what, you know, whatever it is. Just be done with this nonsense. Just be done with it.
And meanwhile, we still have camps in this country, just like the guy is saying we don't.
That's right. Absolutely. Yep. All right. Thank you. I appreciate it, Bob. Something happened there with the sound at the end. But anyway, thanks. Lee is driving in Texas. Hey, Lee.
Hey, Mike.
Hi.
I haven't talked to you since before the cruise.
Well,
we were ball cruisers, so.
Oh, my God. That was a long time ago.
Yeah, I know. Roy Greenwald is calling. I know you don't like to talk about this subject before, but today it's tragic. But the shooter is not dead.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they announced that they had a news conference, and the base commander came on there and repeated it 3 times. He is not dead. He's in stable condition. and under heavy guard.
Well, Lee, the sound quality here is pretty bad, but also we're just about out of time. Thanks, pal. I would like to know as much detail about this as possible, but because it occurred on a military reservation, because military authorities are damn sure not going to divulge all the information, I wonder if we're going to get anything that even resembles the truth of the circumstances of this horrific attack on people on this base. I keep hearing in the reports today that this guy managed to shoot down 43 people, 13 of whom were killed, and he had a handgun, or two. I mean, it's that kind of stuff. I'm not going into any conspiracy mode here whatsoever. I would just like to know, you know, these were Americans who were shot dead. Obviously, the guy has a foreign name. Does that factor in? What is his history? He was a doctor involved in mental health practices on this base. Good God. I just hope we get the truth. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.